From our studios in Cuenca, Spain, I'm Kate Jetmore with Listen. Today we bring you the final interview in our series, Coming Home, in which we've spoken with couples who once lived abroad but returned to their home countries when it came time to raise their children. How did they benefit from living in another culture? How has this experience influenced their style of child rearing? And what advice do they have for others who are facing a similar decision? Joining me today are Juan Cedeño Zamora and Lisa Porter. Juan grew up in central Spain, while Lisa was raised in the UK by an Italian mother and English father. In 2002, they met in Spain while teaching and studying foreign languages. After 2 years working there, they decided to pursue their teaching careers in the UK, which led them to work for the Harper Trust Schools in Bedford and the Hertwood House School in Surrey. Currently, they are both teachers at Framlingham College in Suffolk. They return to Spain 3 or 4 times per year with their 2 bilingual children to visit family and friends. Lisa and Juan, welcome. Thanks so much for joining me on the show.
Hi, Kate.
Thank you.
Thanks for inviting us.
I especially appreciate you taking the time since you're here in Cuenca on holiday. Tell us what your relationship to Cuenca is and what finds you here.
Well, I'm from Cuenca, and it's really nice to just come back from holidays.
So you're here to see your family?
Yeah, exactly, and friends, obviously.
And Lisa's along for the ride.
Mm-hmm.
So when you met, were you living in Cuenca?
So I had come to Cuenca just initially for 1 year. I'd left my teaching job in England, and I was going to teach English as a foreign language here in Cuenca and at a languages centre here, and that's where I met Juan when he was...
Spent a year in the States studying English. When I came back and tried to keep up with my English, that's when I met Lisa. She was teaching at the centre where I was studying.
Okay, and how was she as a teacher?
No,
secrets out.
Yeah, no, she's very, very good. Can't complain.
All right, so you were both living in Cuenca when you met, living and working in Cuenca. And how long did you stay in Cuenca then?
So after that initial year, in that first year, that's when Juan and I met. And I decided to stay on. And so we stayed another year. And I think we would have stayed longer, but things work-wise probably... were the deciding factors on moving back to the UK.
Okay.
I think we were looking for better job opportunities at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought at the time that probably the UK was going to bring us that stability and that better opportunities.
Mm-hmm. And did you find those opportunities before you moved back? Was that something that you were able to sort of secure before you made the move? Or did you move to the UK on the hope that you would find those jobs once you got there?
We got the jobs beforehand. So before moving to the UK, we already secured those jobs.
Yeah, I think that was really important for us.
Yeah.
I think we'd both done a lot of things in the past which were based on, let's go and see. Let's see how things work out. Let's do things for a year. But I think we both realized that this was a serious point where we'd already moved from Cuenca to Toledo to try and improve our job opportunities, and that hadn't really worked out. So I think it was a serious time to start looking at proper job opportunities and career opportunities for both of us.
I suppose because we didn't have any kids at the time, it was just an easier decision. Mm-hmm. It was easier to make that move.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you think you were already aware that you were, on some level, you were considering what it would look like to raise a family in Spain or what it would look like to raise a family in the UK? You said that the main part of your decision had to do with your professional situation. Do you think you were also considering what your future family would look like in each of the countries?
I think it was always in the back of your mind, but it was quite early on in our relationship. So I guess once we'd started thinking about being, you know, serious as a couple, I guess that's always in the back of your mind. But I would say that predominantly it was about, I think we saw the economic crisis coming.
Mm.
We'd had a few things happen to us which made us feel uncomfortable. here work-wise. And, you know, I'd had experience already of working as a teacher in the UK. And so it wasn't going in blind. It was really looking for some stability that I knew would exist for both of us.
Right. So you actually were able to base your decision and inform Juan's decision based on the professional experiences that you had already enjoyed in the UK.
That's right, Kate. And also, I had worked as a teacher in France and in Italy, as well as here in Spain and the UK. So I had quite a lot to compare it with. And I think there's an awful lot to be said culturally about living in different countries, but there's something that made me feel comfortable with my qualifications that I would get the best possible career opportunities in the UK. And I felt that for Juan, as a newly qualified teacher, he would also be able to benefit from those opportunities.
Mm. Which has been the case, really. I don't think I would have had the same opportunities here working in the private sector as I had in the UK.
Mm. Were those other countries that you mentioned on the table when you were deciding to move somewhere else outside Spain? Or was it really just between your home country, Juan, and your home country, Lisa?
I think because of the way most European countries work with their centralized system for civil servants, the teaching opportunities that I wasn't able to tap into in Spain, I knew would be the same situation in France and in Italy. So I don't think they were ever really on the card. Great holiday destinations, but I don't think that ever we really ever even talked about it. Also linguistically, I mean, you do speak Italian and you had studied in Italy, hadn't you?
Yeah, I studied that for a year. And mm-hmm. I always wanted to go back at some point, but I don't think I would have had the same opportunities in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from a different point of view, I think we could work in an international school, but because we are more aware, we now have a CV that would allow us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't have at the time.
Okay, okay. I'm curious, I'd love to know more about what you just mentioned, Lisa, as far as, you know, a very strong or very deeply rooted public education system in many European countries where there are, you know, many people who become qualified as teachers, whether in grammar school or in upper school or in university, and then are effectively civil servants working for the government in the public system. In Spain, that's a very desirable career track. There are many people who have that objective from a very young age and go after it, and then they are effectively tenured from a very young age. The two of you have opted for a very different system, as I understand it. You're working in the UK in the private sector. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah. Yes.
So what's it like? I mean, is there not a comparable comparable public system in the UK?
No, it's an entirely different setup. In the UK, you can train, especially nowadays, to be a teacher through many routes. You can do on-the-job training, you can do graduate training. My way in was the most common at the time, which was to do a degree in any given subject and then to do a postgraduate degree for 1 year called a PGCE, which is a postgraduate certificate in education, where you specialise and you go into college some part of the year and then you go into a school and do practical work experience unpaid for the rest of the year. Another way is to do a BEd, a Bachelor of Arts in Education, which would be a four-year course, usually for primary schools. And I'm not sure how popular that still is. I think a lot of young people these days are very financially aware, having paid for their studies, which we didn't have to do at the time when I was training. And I think they want to be working and earning and training all at the same time.
So just to go back and clarify, because this is part of the British system that
yes.
I'm not familiar with,
yes.
and I suspect that some of our listeners won't be familiar with, you're saying that people who are studying at uni now are paying for their studies, but when you studied at uni, you didn't?
That's right. So
what has changed?
Tony Blair.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yes, I'm not exactly sure of the dates, but a fee for a university course came in, and I think it's around £9,000 per year for British students studying at British universities.
That's in the public system.
In the public system. Mm-hmm. We don't have a private university system, although people now say that it is private because you're paying for it. So
I would say £9,000 a year, that sounds pretty private.
So, for example, at the time when I was at university, you might have paid a subscription, a minor fee, and then your major cost would be your living costs and your study
books,
expensive.
Maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's probably the fee that we used to pay in Spain when we went to university.
Yes, that subscription fee. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it's pretty much across the board, everyone's graduating with no debt. I love this. Okay, so here's the American asking the question, right?
Yeah.
And I say the words university and debt in the same sentence, and the Spaniard and the Brit look at me with just blank expressions. Why would anyone graduate from university with debt?
But this is what we're experiencing now.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So people are thinking twice about heading off to university. And Tony Blair's objective was to have 50% of the UK's school leavers going on to university.
It probably has reached that number now.
It probably has reached that number. With what value, I'm not sure. But that's another conversation.
Right.
Yes, but there is a lot of debt going on. But, for example, my nephew is due to go to university, at least go and go to university in the autumn, in the fall, and he doesn't seem particularly worried about the debt element, because I think he's going to do a course which he feels will have value, and he will hopefully, find a job at the end of, maybe some practical work experience during that course. And I think he'll just manage the debt when the job kicks in and he can start paying it off.
How much of that, how realistic do you think that is? Do you think that some of his opinion has to do with his youth and inexperience, or do you think that that is the way it'll work out?
I think it will work out, because to my mind he's doing serious A-level subjects, which, and he'll do a serious degree, where a lot of people are talking about Mickey Mouse degrees nowadays, and really, is that worth the £30,000-£40,000 you're going to spend on it? Would it be better if you left school and did some vocational training to get to that same end?
Right. I guess it all depends on the person, doesn't it?
It does. And a lot to do with family background and access and so on. But yeah.
Well, coming back to that moment in your lives where you're still in Spain, but you're, you know, looking at your options and making a decision that's really going to determine your path, at least for the given future. You are a bicultural couple, and you know the name of our series is Coming Home. Lisa, you did go home to the UK, but Juan, that wasn't your case. How difficult was it for you to kind of talk through that and decide whose country you were going to settle in? Because in the end, one of you, by definition, was going to be far away from your home country.
I suppose because we are teachers and we are very lucky that we had these holidays, really long holidays. We can get the best of both worlds. So that means that we come home, which is my home, at least 3 or 4 times a year, and we stay at home for you the rest of the year as well. So I think that works both ways.
It does. And actually, you know, that's an aspect of your life that I hadn't really considered, that, you know, you're not based here. You don't get to see your parents every Sunday for dinner. Mm-hmm. But when you are in Spain, you're always on vacation.
Exactly.
That's so quite a positive trade-off.
It's a very, very positive way of living, definitely.
I think we always said that since the beginning, Kate, that if the jobs had been... Juan wasn't a teacher in Spain. So if he had been doing his law-related job in the UK with his 20 days holiday a year or whatever it is, I think he would never have agreed, am I right in saying, to go and live in the UK? Because you wouldn't have had that balance. You would have found that too hard, too much of a sacrifice.
So what kind of holidays do you have?
Well, we work in the private education sector in the UK, the independent sector, and we work more hours
because
during
we are
the week.
Working at boarding school, which is adding hours to the
Saturday school.
We have Saturday school, and a normal day will be from 8 o'clock in the morning until probably 5 o'clock in the afternoon, even later. Sometimes I finish school at 6, quarter past 6. So it's a really long day, and 6 days a week. Well, obviously, yeah.
So I think
the holidays compensate that, mm-hmm. really, that sacrifice of long hours.
Mm-hmm. I think we have 17 or 18 weeks holiday a year, mm-hmm. compared to the state sector, which I think probably have about 12,
yeah.
something like that.
Kind of the summer.
Yes, mm-hmm.
exactly. Yeah. And then a couple months in the summer and then a couple weeks at Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Are your holidays concentrated in the summer? Are they kind of spread out throughout the calendar year?
Every 5-6 weeks we will have some holidays. So we'll have holidays and half term, and then obviously the main holidays, Easter, Christmas, and the summer. But every half term we'll have at least 1 week, if not two.
And do you generally spend that time in Spain?
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah. There's a 1 week vacation in February and a 1 week vacation in May, which we don't tend to come because it's too short a mm-hmm. time. But the rest of the year, in October, in Christmas, in Easter and summer, we tend to come.
That's mm-hmm. wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, coming back to your dynamic as a bicultural couple, Lisa, you were raised in a bicultural home. Your mom is originally from Italy.
That's right.
Your dad was British.
Mm-hmm.
So do you feel like that experience, having grown up in a home like that, has that informed you as a wife to a Spaniard, as a mother to two bicultural children?
I think it definitely has had an influence. I think I don't necessarily feel Italian or British, and I think this is why Brexit hurts so much. I feel European, and I feel we were brought up as Europeans, although there wasn't the same movement with cheap flights and so on and so forth when I was growing up. So my youth was really British because I never left the UK to go to Italy as a child, but just the elements of home life, and actually all my mum's immediate family were in the UK. They all emigrated from Italy as well. And so we had a strong Italian community and a strong sense of actually not just Italian and British in my family home. We would often have people from all over the world. My dad worked in the foreign exchange and often had foreign visitors. People came from all over the world and would often be hosted in our family. So we were used to a lot of different cultural elements, which I think opened my mind certainly as a child, and made it easier to imagine how a bilingual, bicultural family might work. Although I wasn't brought up bilingually, unfortunately, and that I could have another whole podcast about that.
We'll have to have you back.
It's really interesting about bilingualism, how each family circumstance is different and how it works out. But yeah, I think that, and my friends always said to me, we know you're going to marry someone who isn't British. I think your friends said...
My friends used to say exactly the same thing.
And look.
Here we are.
Well, Lisa, you mentioned the elephant in the room, Brexit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people the world over are hearing about Brexit, seeing it on social media, on TV, hearing it on the radio. I mean, you kind of can't escape it. But I'm not sure that people really know what is going on. Maybe I'm assuming too much to think that you guys know what's going
Nobody
on.
Nobody knows, really. Nobody
I don't
knows.
Think anyone really
well,
knows.
Could you share with us a little bit about what it's like to be in the UK while everything is sort of shaking out and, you know, hopefully coming to a place of clarity? What is it like living there while this is going on?
I think it's really important that Juan tells you about how he felt the day those results came in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I felt like half of the people that they were there or I was working with would say, well, I don't want you as a foreigner. We don't want you to work here. I never experienced that, but I had that feeling. And my everyday life hasn't changed at all. I mean, I carry on doing exactly the same things, so having the same conversations, having the same contact with people as I had before Brexit. But there is an atmosphere, there is something saying, I know that half of those people in that room don't want any foreigners, and I'm part of that, those foreigners that are working, taking jobs in this country.
Mm-hmm.
But I never feel rejected, to be honest. I never had that feeling of that.
And why do you say half the people? Because that's what the vote was?
That's the vote. Exactly.
51%.
It was 51%, so it's basically half of the people in a room.
Mm-hmm.
Or 10 people, 5 would say, we don't want you there.
Did you ever have you ever considered personally or as a couple since the Brexit vote was taken, have you ever gotten to the point where you thought maybe we shouldn't be living here?
We had a couple of conversations about that. Yes, depends how things go, and we are free to go anywhere. And as I said before at the beginning of the conversation, now that we build up a CV and we can apply for jobs in other places, I wouldn't have a problem myself just leaving the UK and working somewhere else, not necessarily Spain, but other places.
Mm-hmm. You're in a stronger position now.
And we could do that.
I certainly think that when Brexit has moved forward and we understand better how things are going to pan out and you know, laws are put into place and so on and so forth, that we will make decisions then. I don't think it's a good idea to be pushed into a corner by scaremongering or any kind of feeling that things are going to be dramatically different. I'm not sure that from one day to the next or from one year to the next we're going to feel such a difference. Maybe I'm naive, but from the day of the vote until now, we've just seen delay after delay after delay and a lot of panic, people panicking. And I understand that sense of panic because a lot of people say it was my mother at the time had given up her Italian passport. She'd rooted her whole family and her life in the UK, so there was no option of moving back. Whereas I feel that what Juan said about our CVs and the way we view the world and our sort of idea that, well, we could pick up our family and go to an international school now that we have a lot of years of experience between us, it might be a possibility. Maybe the children won't be so happy about that now that we've moved nearer my family in Suffolk and they feel very settled and we're in a lovely school. Hopefully it won't come to that until they finish their schooling, but it might certainly be something that we would think about in the future. But my feeling, well, I think our feeling about Brexit is wait and see.
Exactly. People just tell these horror stories about they wouldn't be able to apply for citizenship and they would be kicked out of the country and it was very complicated and it was going to cost thousands of pounds. My experience being that in 24 hours I had my citizenship and I have permit granted for the next few years to, so nothing's going to change for me really.
Was that something, was citizenship something that you pursued after the Brexit?
After the Brexit, exactly. Just to feel secure, particularly for children. I don't want to want them to have an unstable situation, obviously.
Right. Well, that's not a bad track record. 24 hours to get your paperwork taken care of.
It was fairly easy.
Now, I think the Home Office have been what Juan said about not feeling welcome, I think the Home Office were very keen to send out that message. So they were sending a lot of information out to foreign residents saying, we want you here, you're welcome. Please don't just rush off and leave us. We want to make this work. So that's been very positive, and you receive frequent updates from the Home Office about the situation. And
That is positive.
It is very positive, yeah. So there's no scaremongering there.
Right. I think what I heard you say, Juan, that I just want to highlight for a moment, is that when you watched the results come in from the Brexit vote, that it felt very, you know, negative and not the result that you wanted to see, especially as an immigrant. And you also said, I haven't personally been, you know, that my coworkers haven't treated me any differently. I haven't been, you know, the focus or the target of that kind of racism or...
I never experienced that. No. I know what you mean, but I never experienced any sort of racism or,
but people have.
Single out. So it hasn't been my experience. I remember the day that Brexit was the following day, and I remember my daughter crying, saying that we had to get our suitcases because we had to leave the house and go somewhere else. And I remember she was in tears, and I felt really sorry for her.
Of course you did.
Go into detail and explain that nothing was going to change for the time being.
Well, and as you know, as parents, we put on that strong front, don't we? But that doesn't mean there's not that little seed in the back of your mind that's thinking, I'm not 100% sure that that things are going to work out, you know? So it sounds like it is working out. And it also sounds like, you know, picking up and moving to an international school is your plan B, but that's a pretty good plan B. What can you share with us about how life compares between, you know, sort of day-to-day living in the UK, day-to-day living in Spain? What are the differences that stand out the most to the two of you?
This is kind of funny. I think when we first moved to the UK, and it was just us, we didn't have children, and we moved to a medium-sized town, it's comparable to Cuenca, Bedford, and it would get, you know, we'd finish the working day, it would be 5 o'clock, we'd go home, and everything was shut, and there was no life in the streets, and Juan was desperate.
All I wanted to get is to get out of the house and have a beer somewhere.
Or walk around the streets without shops being open, or but just have life in the streets, and you found that so hard, and, you know, how you explain that to a British person?
And it also gets dark so early, right?
Gets dark really early.
That's another thing that's difficult.
You move in September and you head into winter. That was hard.
That was hard.
Wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's
great days,
But I think once you realise that every couple of months you'd be able to come back to it, you know, imagine it was the States and Spain. That's a massive difference. You can't just kind of hop back and forth.
Right.
We talked about that on the way over here, didn't we? How we might compare your family situation or our family situation or any given couple that might be crossing continents rather than a 2-hour plane ride.
Right.
But what did you miss? We didn't have any internet, did we, when we moved 2004?
Definitely internet has made things easier to keep in touch with family, with friends. Yeah, definitely. Even watching the news.
Yeah, I was just going to say, do you follow the Spanish
news?
Yes,
I read the paper every single day, the Spanish papers, and I watch the news pretty much every other day. And I like to keep in touch, definitely.
Yeah. So you read the Spanish papers every day.
Mm-hmm.
Do you read British papers every day?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Okay. Got me beat then. Yeah. Because I read a lot of American media, and I am embarrassed to say that I don't really keep up with Spanish media.
Don't you?
Yeah. I mean, you kind of can't miss it because you turn on the TV and you hear the radio in the car and things like that. So, but I'm not like reading articles and digging deep.
Being a teacher, we have the papers in the staff room, and that's one of the things that I will do every single break.
Is it paper?
An actual paper.
Wow.
And I love reading the papers.
That's a pleasure. That's a pleasure.
And any school worth its salt will have the range of paper, so you can dip in, and you're not just, I think quite often can happen when you're reading online, you just focus in on to what you want to hear. I think that was a problem with Brexit. I won't go back to that. But and then they auction the papers.
So they don't, is that right?
Yeah.
How often does that happen?
At the end of every term,
at the end of every term.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, it's good to know that they're going to a good home. When people
a wonderful resource.
Yeah, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Really lucky.
Is it in the, I think you said it was in the break room? Is that what you said?
Yeah,
or is it in the
staff common room?
Okay.
The staff common room.
Okay.
So we have probably 6 papers every single day that we get delivered, and we have a coffee and you have a chance to read the paper. So yes, keep abreast of everything that's going on in the UK. Or maybe on my phone, I could read Spanish papers.
Are there things that you miss? I mean, we've established that you come to Spain with regularity, you know, 3 times a year, 4 times a year. When you're here, even though it's just for a visit, are there things that you miss about the UK?
Your house?
Probably
being in a flat?
Probably my house, exactly. Being in a flat is not the same as living in a house. Hearing the neighbors next door or something that I certainly don't miss when I'm living in the UK.
Yeah, in Spain, it's quite common for people to live in a flat or an apartment.
And probably a big part of why they do go out and walk in the streets to see people and socialize and just get out and about.
But just some material things, but apart from that, no, I wouldn't miss anything.
Going back to the life on the street, I remember when I first moved here, we were in the car going somewhere, and it was like Sunday afternoon or Sunday evening, so shops weren't open. You know, in Spain, everything's closed on a Saturday evening. And I asked my husband, who was my boyfriend at the time, I said, where are all these people going? Because the street was just, it was full of people. The sidewalks were full of people, and I thought, well, there must be like a concert going on or something, or some kind of gathering that they're all going to, and he was like, they're just walking.
It's like the cultural thing, like in Italy, the passeggiata.
Exactly. That's a very, very good comparison. Well, Lisa and Juan, I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your holiday to sit down with me today. I've really enjoyed our conversation.
Oh, us too. Thank you.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, and good luck with the podcasts.
Thank you. This completes our series, Coming Home. Many thanks to Javier García Nieva and Silvio Martínez Andrés, Ernesto Arias Paloma and María Ángeles Recuero Checa, and Juan Cedeño Zamora and Lisa Porter for their generous contributions. Listen is sponsored by RAV, cutting-edge cuisine in a traditional setting. For a look at the RAF dining experience, visit www.rafsanpedro.es. That's www.rafsanpedro.es. The producers of Listen are Lauren Lovett and Laura Munoz Solera. Our technical director and engineer is Iñaki Martinez, with original music by Lucas Munoz Jetmore. I'm Kate Jetmore, and this is Listen.